This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Good morning, or good afternoon, if you happen to be back, especially now, afternoon, because back in the East, it's afternoon. So you're here live with Dr. Jeff, your host for the next 30 minutes here on Instagram Live, Pet Life Radio, not on today because our producer is traveling, lucky him, he's on a cruise. So good morning, Steph, and anyway, so here with you, and any questions you might have, now is the time to ask, and I'll wait for more people to come on. So first of all, I don't know, Ben, where you are, but here in LA, a gorgeous weekend. It's fantastic. So we're, you know, good. It's just a chill weekend, weekend of good football, if you like football. But anyway, just having a good time. So let's talk about some of the cases I had. I had some very interesting cases this week. First of all, as a follow-up, and I'm going to post it and also show pictures. Remember the escalator dog, right, little Sammy? Well, doing great. On his left foot, the hind foot that both got crunched in the escalator, he's lost a toenail for sure. Doesn't look like it's going to grow back. Not a big deal. We were able to save the toe, at least for now. It's a little swollen. I'm not 100% out of the woods yet. I am very, very careful with these things, but at least he's not limping. He's happy. He's running around. It might be permanent. It might take for a while, but anyway. Hold on. Here's from Steph. All right, my friend found a cat with a significant laceration on his nose. Anything she can do to help heal it? Well, here's a problem with noses in general, that anything you put on it, both dogs and cats, they love to lick. In fact, as a matter of fact, when we want to get a cat to take some oral medication that's like a paste or a liquid, like, for example, my Laxair, my favorite laxative or Laxatone, we say that if they're not going to take it right off your finger, they may not just take a little dollop and put it right there, right under the nose. They hate there. Cats are fastidious. Cats love to clean. And they're going to lick it right off, and it works great. If it's a deep laceration, it might need some sutures. You may need to see a veterinarian, or sometimes a glue, a skin adhesive could do the trick. It all depends on the laceration, how big it is, exactly where it is. And as long as, then it's the opposite. Sometimes if you're worried about the cat continue licking it, and you put something on it, it's going to perpetuate the licking, then maybe do nothing. Clean it, a little soap and water, no hydrogen peroxide, and no alcohol. Whenever you have an open wound, no alcohol. It can destroy raw tissue. It burns, it stings, so no alcohol. Steph, if you want, have her take a picture, and you can give her my cell phone, you have it, and then have her send me the picture right away, and then with her information, and I can reach out to her. But without seeing it, it's hard to tell how serious it might be and how much you have to do. If it's superficial and easy, leave it alone. It's no big deal. Giving this new monthly Simparica Trifol. All right, so if you have such a flea problem, hey, Deb, how you doing? If you have such a flea problem that the Simparica Trio is not working for even a month, then something may be going on. You may then need to treat the environment. And typically with the newer products, and they're so effective, we don't really need to treat the environment because all the baby fleas, once they hatch, they have a day or two to find a host. If they don't get that first blood meal, they're going to die on their own. And if they do jump on the dog and take that first blood meal, they're going to die that way. So, you know, we used to really come. Also, our knowledge of the flea life cycle has changed to where it's now thought that 80% of adult fleas living on the pet. And those that aren't living on the pet are either going to find you or they're going to die. So that blood meal is essential. You know, before that first meal, they can jump on anywhere. But once they take that first blood meal, apparently something changes in their intestinal tract where now they become obligate parasites. They need that blood meal. If they don't get another one, they're going to die on their own. So that's why most of these isoxazolines are very effective, because they're so effective at killing the fleas. So if there's so many, remember, a single adult female flea under the right conditions can lay anywhere from 25 to 40 eggs a day. And then when those hatch and they start becoming egg laying, then they're going to, I mean, that's why they multiply so rapidly. You got to stop that cycle. So in the old days, what we used to do is have premise sprays and premise treatments and the air foggers, et cetera. We now know that we don't need them as much with a very effective treatment. So if it is overwhelming, then we may need to do that as well. Another thing you could try is the Nitin Pyrem, which is Capstar. Capstar is a very effective, fast kill. It'll kill every flea on them in a matter of 30 minutes. So you might want to use that, but unlike the others, there's no lasting effect. It's good for now. So it's not one of those things where you can do it now and then and hope that it'll last 24 hours at max. So in that case, but keep trying. And as I said, if there are a lot of fleas and you're still within the 30-day period, give them a Capstar, a Nitin Pyrem. So, and by the way, you can get that over the counter now. Most vet shops have it. So it's still very effective, safe. I've never had a problem. There are some medications out there that are really getting a bad rap online. Some possibly, might be justified. One of them that's there that I am still on the fence, because I'm hearing from two expert sides, is the Librela. Personally, I had one animal that had a reaction, but it wasn't a terrible reaction. It was under the weather for a day or two. And obviously, there's so many things going on in an animal's life and they pick up things outside all the time. We don't know if it was because of that. It's coincidental. So I have my clients go online, do their own homework, but I'll tell you one thing, animals that have been on it, my pets, my patients that have been on it, I don't have to remind them to come back in. Their parents are bringing them back in a month later. That's how effective it is. So, I'm on the fence. So another case that I had was very interesting, and this really supports the theory that you need to know your pets. You need to know their norm. So when something is out of that norm, you know exactly what you need to do. And this was a case, a very, very long-term client of mine. She calls me. Now, mind you, it was Friday. Friday's my short day. I actually book myself only from 10 to 2. If I get out by 3:30, I'm happy. So, which is often the case, because when those callers come in and they have a problem, I'm going into a weekend, as I said, I'm not an academic dog, and I'm very happy about that. I'm very practical. And I will therefore, if I'm on the fence with a case, is it something I really need to know now? Is it not? Can I wait? Can I not wait? Can I try to be conservative? I treat them differently and I tell them openly. I got to tell you, I treat a dog differently on a Monday or Tuesday than I will Thursday or Friday. Why? What's the difference in the day of the week? It's a huge difference, because if I am really worried or potentially worried and I need to see what happens over the next day or so, then on a Monday or Tuesday, I'm very conservative in my approach. I might say, let's try this, try that. Let's give it a day. Give it 2 days, see what happens. But on a Friday, I don't have the luxury of 2 days because we're not open during the weekend and I'm tough to be getting a hold of. And on top of that, if we send them automatically to emergency, and I've learned from an air vet that 90%+ of emergencies aren't, then they're going to go to this emergency facility. I don't want to mention names because they're all corporate and I hate them all. And they are basically, you walk in the door, you won't get out for less than $1,000. You have young veterinarians, they're worried. I don't think they do it to make money. Most of them are on salary. I think they do it because they're not sure. They're afraid. And I understand when you're afraid, you have to take the high road just in case. You don't want it on your shoulders to think that you made a mistake by not doing everything. So, but they do everything. When a dog is limping, I don't know any physiologic metabolic disorder, liver, kidney, that's going to cause limping on an acute onset. So why are you taking blood tests? It blows my mind. So, but anyway, this is the nature of the beast. This is what they do. And so therefore I'm not a favor and you will end up spending a fortune. So I try to deal with every person I can. And I, as I said, my disease that I have is I can't say no disease. So if you need to come in, they'll come in. I'm glad it worked, because here's a case, dog ADR, a little pale, just for a day or two, as I said, not doing right. Something was off. And again, mom knows her dog. So come in. Sure enough, we take a little blood test, anemic. We take some x-rays. And what do we find on the x-rays? Well, first of all, the x-ray wasn't as clear as normal, but that could be our machine sometimes. And there was concern. We saw something in the stomach. that was very, I mean, it was fairly good size. It didn't look like it would make it out of the pylorus. So that was a concern. How it got in there, we don't know. We don't know what it was. It just, you could see it on an x-ray, both views. And it was still in the stomach. So then we say, okay, let's do an ultrasound. We do an ultrasound. And clearly there are pockets of fluid in the belly. And that's not a good sign, by the way. And when we tap one of the pockets, what comes out? Blood. So there's our answer. So the spleen, you really couldn't see. You saw some areas of the spleen that were a little bit irregular, but it wasn't like dramatic. But when you have free floating blood in the abdomen, you need to cut. So we do. And sure enough, there were two lesions on the spleen that were bleeding a little bit. There were tons. But the reason why we didn't have clarity on the ultrasound and the x-ray, there were tons of clots. That means this thing's been bleeding for a little while, but then it stops on its own. And that's not uncommon. And of course, we felt something in the stomach. Anyway, we do a splenectomy. We're going to send the spleen out for biopsy because that's going to make a big difference in prognosis. If it's a splenic hematoma or hemangioma, this is going to be curative. But if it's a hemangiosarcoma, we have to let mom know that this is not a good thing. And a stomach. So we can identify, we isolate this, whatever it was. We had no idea. We cut right over it. We open the stomach. We take this thing out. It was a piece of glass. I mean, it was a hunk of glass. How the heck did this glass get into the stomach? That means it's got to go through the esophagus. And there's no telling how long it's been there. But that. So here was the part that made us say, we, you know, at least worry, was seeing that thing in the stomach. And that was probably secondary. That thing wasn't going to move. It was going to stay there. It's non-reactive. Who knows how long it's been there. But what really got this dog was the bleeding spleen. P.S. Dog went home, of course, because I stayed late and do the surgery. I didn't get out of there till 4:30-ish. But I got to tell you, these are the cases that make us as veterinarians feel so good. Had I waited and said, you know what, we're not that bad. The bloods weren't terrible. The anemia was mild. It's an older dog. You know, let's wait it out. Then this dog may not have made it through the weekend. So, these are the great cases where you know that these hands made a difference. Dog's doing very well. I mean, the dog walked out. When it woke up from anesthesia, it walked out of the office. And after major surgery, I mean, splenectomy, a gastrotomy, that's a lot for a little dog to handle. An 8-year-old dog, no less. So that was really great. All right, let's see. Annie, all over her body and clean. Let me see what we got here. I didn't see the first part. My dogs seem to react to cystone. She's developing blisters. Are we talking about Cytopoint? Tell me about cystone. I'm not familiar. Catsnippers, I'm waving. Wave. Let's see. My dog seems to have a reaction to cyst. I need to know a little bit more of that medicine. So regardless of the medicine, if there was a reaction, if it's an acute reaction, blisters, I would use something to actually fight the reaction. It could be a steroid in a pinch if you're home and you have no access, even Benadryl. You know, Benadryl, I like Benadryl. It's not like for long-term allergy, seasonal allergies. It's not going to help that because histamine is not the major player. It's not, we now know it's interleukin 31. So to give antihistamine to fight that kind of allergy is not going to be effective. I like it for two. Number one, for acute hypersensitivity reactions, like a bee sting or something like this cyst or blisters or there is hives, then you might get some advantage to an antihistamine like Benadryl. Why do I like Benadryl more? And which is why I'm not a fan of things like the non-drowsy ones, like, you know, Zyrtec or whatever, one of the side effects of the good old-fashioned antihistamines is that it has a drowsy effect. And so when these dogs are reacting to something, they're hyped up. So to give something, even though it's not going to actually help necessarily a reaction, it does chill them out. It does calm them down. So that a milligram per pound. So typically a 25-pound dog is going to get a single adult pill, which is 25 milligrams. So that's something you can do. Also, if the reaction is like a topical skin reaction, sometimes just a nice bath with a very mild shampoo and not hot water, more like a cold water, and that also might help bring down some of the swelling. And if anything like that persists, or if they're scratching incessantly, we don't want them to start getting infection by over scratching. So then you may need to see your veterinarian, may need something a little stronger, may need some antibiotics, et cetera. So it just really depends what the source is and what the reaction was. So, but I would like to know what the medicine was. All right. Have you blood inside your ears? I mean, whatever it is, that sounds like an acute allergic reaction called urticaria, which are hives. And in a case like that, steroid will work, Benadryl, a good antihistamine. I would do more of not the Claritin or the Zyrtec. I would do more of diphenhydramine, which is Benadryl, or chlortrimeton, which is chlorpheniramine. Those seem to work better, and they have a little bit of a drowsy effect, which I am. If they're hives, they're probably scratching, probably miserable. So I think the drowsy effect would be good. All right. Fur is falling off of her tail, and all these started when she returned home after cystotomy surgery. Now we're talking cystotomy. I still want to know what cystone is. Anyway, so the surgery itself was probably not the cause of this acute reaction. Notice I said probably not. It's one thing you learn over the years, never say never, because every animal is different. Every animal can have a different reaction to something. So, you know, I wouldn't say it's 100% not that, but typically I'd be looking at something. What are the medications that were sent home after a cystotomy or any surgery like that? I'm sure there are going to be some diet changes. There's going to be some medication. There's going to be some anti-pain medication. There's going to be, some like a gabapentin, an antibiotic possibly. So a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory or even a steroidal anti-inflammatory. So it really depends what was sent home. More likely than not, the current reaction, if it's related at all, by the way, it may have nothing to do with it. It may have been the dog got bitten by something and that, like a bee or a spider, and just had a wicked reaction. So a lot of times we may never know what the underlying cause was. We treat it, we treat symptomatically, we treat empirically, but we're doing because we want to take care of what we're seeing before our eyes. In this case, would be these bubbles, these cysts, these urticaria, whatever they are. But I as I said, I would, and it also, if it's also a week and some days that I realize might be the cause, I as I said, I'm not saying it's not 100%, but I would still be looking for something else. Could be something related to the surgery, as I said, a pre-op medication, a post-op medication, something that it went home with, but it could be the anesthetic agent, but it's not likely the fact that there was a cystotomy done. And don't go away after these short messages from our sponsors here on Pet Life Radio, and we'll be right back.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising, so I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's carnivora.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Okay, we are back live. So, I'm not familiar with cystone. I'd like to know what it is. But yes, I would agree. It's more likely the medicine given post this, the actual bladder stone removal. All right, Jan. Hey, Jan, how you doing? My male dog licks other dogs' pee. Okay, oh, well, you're a male dog. Read the male dog book. And that is, yes, licking. My Frenchie is no true. I have 5 dogs. 2 of them are like that. In fact, my Frenchie, one of the other 4 others that are left will urinate somewhere He sits right by them while urinating. And then when he's done, when they're done, he goes over, gives it a little lick, and then pees right on top of it. And he's neutered. He's been neutered since he's young. I mean, it's a behavior. It is a male dog thing, and it's pretty normal. And if he's not if he's unaltered, even more so. Even neutered dogs do it, because my friend, she's neutered. All my dogs are neutered. But if he's not neutered, oh my God, that's a macho male thing. They're sniffing at it, and interestingly, wouldn't surprise me if after he gives a couple of licks, he pees right on top of it. So that's pretty normal. All right. Jan McCarr, I sent you a Raspberry Lab. Jan, if you want to be on the live, just give me another heads up, because most times I accept that people made a mistake. They hit the wrong button and they didn't mean to. All right. Ivy Blue Eye, how do you compete with the corporate vets who get to buy vaccines, medications at a semi low rate? You know, it's tough. The practice I'm at, the owners, actually own three hospitals, so they get some good breaks. And, you know, what they do is they lock you into deals based on other things that you could buy from the companies. A lot of the lab companies and product companies, if you give them a certain amount of buying per month or whatever, they give you a good break. So look, I first of all, in my opinion, I didn't become a veterinarian to push drugs. So I often tell, and you know, from a business standpoint, and I don't own the practice I'm at, I'm done with ownership. I owned for 25, 30 years. And 35 years, and I'm good. But I find that the hassle of having products on the shelf is, and then having to throw away when they're not sold, and inventory control, and all of that's not easy for an owner. So it's we'll sometimes send home a medication for like a few days to a week and tell the owner that, look, we can't compete with the online pharmacies. You know, we're buying in hundreds, they're buying in thousands. So it behooves you to go online, order online. And we just sell them a week's worth so they can get started and they can make their orders, et cetera. And they're happy with that. And I'm happy with that, because owners really don't, hospital owners don't want to deal with this anymore. We can't compete. You're right. They buy in so much bulk, they can give a better price. And we just can't compete. So who wants to? Look, I'd rather spend my time dealing with a patient's problem, not pills to go home. So we have a full pharmacy at the office. Most of us, most hospitals do, but we're no longer trying to encourage them to buy the month dose of something, right? For a month long, or 3 or a week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, depending on the medication. I'd say, you know what, we'll get you started so you can go home, go onto XYZ website. Here's what you put for your hospital, and just order from them. It'll save you some money. They go, okay. And in fact, now, you know, because of that, many of the online pharmacies are now sharing the profit with the veterinarian. So the veterinarian still gets something. Is it? Are they going to retire on that something? Heck no. But you know, it justifies a little bit. So it's almost like that becomes their offsite pharmacy, and they become partners. So the profits that are made from the sale of those drugs, you share it with the partners. So we become their partner. You know, it's a way around it, but you know, it's okay. All right, Janet. Hello. The corporations are awful. Well, I can't disagree. Just leave it at that. I can't disagree. Not only that, you're going to get me started. I've had cases, and again, I am a very proud general practitioner. I'm not an expert. I'm not a specialist. Very proud. But one thing I have on my side is 40 plus years of practice, and that gives me a lot of wisdom. And I've seen cases from these fancy specialty groups that were so poorly managed. And the tests and some of these young doctors, and it's okay. When I first graduated, I didn't know much either. But if you're going to have and spend that kind of money to be at a hospital, it's a specialty hospital. They have these experts. To not have an expert overseeing the cases with the young doctors and the interns, all right, and the residents to make sure they're on the right track, that's the crime. So when I see these, I have challenged often some of the choices made by some of these practices. And if they probably hate my guts, they do. I'm sure they do. Because I'm not going to sit back and see my clients being taken advantage of. only because if somebody's not so sure of what to do. So what do? They test for everything. And am I a fan? Zero. And one of the reasons why I keep myself available literally 24/7, and I'm on AirVet, our telemedicine platform, is because if I could do something, I think I mentioned this on Thanksgiving Day. Okay. I had, I think I've had 10 calls in the span of 2-3 hours and virtual visits. Not one of them needed to see an emergency. And many of them, you know, we always check back a day or two later because the case is open for 72 hours, 3 days. And they're thanking me and they're giving me an update. That's the way medicine should be. And we don't have all the answers right away. But sometimes we may not know exactly what to do, but we know what not to do. And on a case like this, you give them some, and that's why I always tell people, you know what, I'm not so sure about this, but I don't think it's something super serious. Let's try this. Give it a few hours. Our case is open. You can always come back on and reach me and we'll talk and see, we'll go from there. Not one needed to go to emergency. And that's what drives me nuts. All right. Male dog licking other dogs, peas and leaves, and et cetera. Is this harmful? No, it's not harmful. Okay. And it happens all the time, Dan. Now, oh wait, let me go backwards. Yes. Could it be harmful? Now we're talking the zebra. Yeah. If that dog that does the peeing somehow, right, has been infected with leptospirosis, and now your other dog goes and licks that urine, can lepto be transmitted? Yes, it can be. So is it impossible? No, not impossible. Is it likely, however? Not very likely. So it all depends on the lifestyle of the dogs urinating. If they go into the mountains, if they're, you know, we're doing a lot of hiking where there are animals that are shedding lepto, and then they pick it up, and then it starts affecting them, yes, it's possible. But when I start taking a dog in, like your dog who licks other dogs' pee, and start testing and spending thousands of dollars on testing, only to prove that it wasn't that? No. Now, if the dog starts getting sick, yeah, then we'll do some testing. But otherwise, I would just sit and watch. Okay. What's the shaking thing? The thoughts. So that is like a type of behavior where it's almost like a sexual behavior when a male picks up the scent of a female in heat. Okay, and they start licking, doing their lip thing. That is, it's something that's pretty common, pretty normal, and it's nothing I would worry about. It's just, he's a boy. What can I tell you? It's a sexual thing. My neutered Frenchie pees over his half-sister's beaker. Yes, of course they do that. They don't understand, especially a male. Remember that males want to lay claim to an area. So if there is a urine of another animal in that area, okay, that doesn't make your dog feel good. He wants to be the boss. So he is going to start peeing over that and saying, oh no, you think you're going to take over my territory? Not a chance. This is my territory. That's normal behavior. And that happens like all the time. All right, Roger, how you doing? Lip quivering. Yeah, I know exactly what it is. All right. You waved at me. Hi, I'm just waving. Trazodone. How long can you use trazodone? It depends. It depends how often you're using it. What you're using it for. Do I like to keep them? You know, if I have a dog that needs to be on some sort of anti-anxiety suppressive medicine that is not episodic, when I use trazodone or recommend Xanax, it's for, it's Thursday, it's trash day, my dog goes nuts for the trash, so I'm going to put him on those medications. That's okay. But if you find that you need to do it every day, 24 hours a day, I'm going to go to Prozac, all right? Or one of the longer-term medications. So you give it once a day because you don't know when, and it's more of a lower requirement to have to treat them. And it doesn't have that suppressive effect on their mental state, like some of the others. So I like trazodone a lot. It's probably one of my favorite. Animals going on a plane. I used to use acepromazine. I find that a lot of dogs don't do well on it. So I'm going to use trazodone, or I'll recommend Xanax, alprazolam. Now, understand, we used to carry Xanax, but of all, I used to joke about it. Like, apparently it's not a joke, but I would prescribe Xanax. And whenever we prescribe, every dog is different. Yeah, react differently. So we don't know if it's going to be the successful effect that we want it to be. So I will say to an owner, kind of joking, say, look, try this Xanax. If it doesn't work, you take it. It'll help you. And so, but unfortunately, in many hospital environments, apparently some of the employees know that. So the owners of the practice I work at, they own three practices, they stop stocking Xanax. We just have to script it out and send it out. So anyway, that's it. How long can you continue? Can you see if hyperactive jazz? Yes, that's my point. Deb, is it if it's continually hyperactive, I would do something that has a longer term effect. Because trazodone, you have to give it 2-3 times a day. And I don't know, it just seems like a lot. I would do more behavior modification, maybe see or talk to a behaviorist, see if there are any triggers that might cause this dog's hyperactivity and try to get to the bottom of it instead of just masking it with more drugs. So that would be probably a recommendation. Now, again, I've had a lot of animals that have seen the behaviorist and what do they end up doing? Putting them on Prozac. So it may be the solution. And another thing I'll tell you, that when you're trying to train a dog, okay, and you are trying to desensitize them to some sort of stimulus that's causing this hyperactivity, it's hard to get them to respond when they're all hyped up. So a lot of times we'll use the downer, if you will, at the beginning of a training episode, training treatment, so that way they will be sort of more, the training will be more effective. They'll be more responsive because it brought them down a little bit. So that in that case, yes, you will do it. But I don't know. There may be a better way long term if you're doing it, if you have to do it every day, 2-3 times a day to achieve that calm, then I would say, talk to a behaviorist. We have a really good one here in West LA. So it's, and again, I'll warn you now, a behaviorist is a specialist. They go through extra training and they are costly. But you know what? If it's going to help and it's going to remedy the problem, then it's worth it. All right. Melatonin, good alternative. Melatonin, yes. Now that melatonin is a little more natural. Gabapentin, it's not natural, but I have my chill product. And it's melatonin, it's valerian root, passion flower, chamomile, L-tryptophan. It got all of those supplements that have a sedative calming effect. So if you want, you could try that. Reach out to me. We'll get you started on some chill. And hey, if we could solve the problem more naturally, oh, way better, way better. But it all depends on what the underlying cause is. And then again, we have to wait and see if these things will help. All right. Okay. I think I hit everybody, which is good. If there's anybody that has other questions, you can always reach out to me during the week. I'm available. I'm not always so easy to get a hold of, but I will get back to you. And other than that, have a great week, everybody. And we will see you here next week. I will be back on along with Pet Life Radio. And that's why we didn't have to take a break today because there's no commercial break. The commercial is me. Pick my brain. That's part of the commercial. All right. See you next week. And as I said, have a wonderful week, everybody. Keep your dog safe. And oh, by the way, back to the Ozzy, the dog we did the splenectomy and the glass. He was brought in because something was off. It was minor, but it was just off. Know your pets. Know what one of my cats, and cats don't give you a lot of time, trust me, because when they are hiding it, masking it, hiding it, and then when all of a sudden it hits and they can't any longer, whatever it is usually pretty extensive. It's a drag. So dogs, you can see that just even something, going down the stairs a little more slowly, not eating his food, not attacking his food regularly, not wanting to play. When you go out and you get the leash ready, all those little things, it's just little, but it could be important. Take note and see your veterinarian. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.